Hello and welcome to episode 91 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben304.
So, I guess the biggest news that concerns the both of us is that Shardlight has been released and is now available for purchase.
Everybody knows that, though, already. We told them in the last podcast when it was coming out.
We did, but I mean, now it's actually a thing. It actually happened, and we have to deal with the consequences and repercussions and all that stuff, so...
What?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
You've really only just woken up, haven't you?
I really have just woken up, and I'm sick.
More so than usual.
And I'm also in a stupor because, you know, releases are always weird things and whatever. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
How does it put you in a stupor?
Well, you know, because there's always... We've talked about this at length, but, you know, for the listeners out there, just some advice is if you release a game, don't read too many reviews and don't read any comments because you'll just drive yourself nuts. And I've been guilty of doing that in the past, and I've been guilty of doing it in the present. And
you were guilty of doing it until about 13 hours ago when you did it and were like, oh, this is it, I'm done.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, look, here's the thing. And Dave agrees with me on this, even though he can sometimes do the same thing, is once you've read a few reviews, you know most of the critical points
and
issues
much.
People will have with your game. Any reading after that is just satisfying morbid curiosity of reviews that are usually pretty similar.
Yeah.
You're not actually doing much by reading them all.
Mm-hmm.
You're just really wasting time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know. And, like, if somebody sends you a comment or an email or a tweet or anything like that and is like, hey, I enjoyed the game, or hey, I didn't like the game, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But seeking them out constantly, ugh.
Yeah, that's not good. It'll just drag
you
nuts. It is. You could be doing so much better things. You could be channeling all that negative energy into something creative. And...
Well, what negative energy? It's not necessarily negative energy, but...
The neurotic negative energy. I'm speaking personally here for myself.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
well, hopefully next time you release a game, you won't fall into that trap so much.
I probably will, but whatever.
Whatever.
We'll see. We'll deal with it when the time comes.
As a dog returns to his vomit, so a fool returns to his folly.
I've never heard that, but that's fascinating.
Hmm.
Anyway, so what have you been playing this week?
Well...
Actually, wait, before we get into that, you mentioned that we have a mailbox letter.
Oh, do you want to do that now? Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah,
we got
right
a podcast listener mailbox personal message from our dear listener, Ponch. Hello, Ponch.
Hi, Ponch.
And I am going to read it for you so that everybody can hear. Hopefully he hasn't put any... I haven't actually read it.
Oh my god, really?
I have, but I'm trying to create suspense.
Oh, okay.
I'm doing what you do. I'm lying to make the podcast more interesting.
Okay, good. I'm glad I've taught you well.
Because I wanted to make it like, oh, he could have put death threats in here and I wouldn't know, but then you actually believe
Ponch
me.
Ponch would never put death threats in a message, believe me.
You don't know that.
He would only put death threats if we hadn't podcasted in a while and his teats were overflowing with colored milk flavors.
Or if we teased putting Spaceman in space back in and then...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I think that'd
that would probably
anyway,
set him off. Anyway.
Let's see what Ponch has to say, which I definitely haven't already read
and
scanned for death threats.
Okay.
Dear Blue Tools Cupcast,
hey.
I really enjoyed your latest installment. I can't be sure of the exact episode, as Ben304 never updates the thread for easy reference.
That's right, he doesn't.
Regarding... That's not part of the email. Nobody says that's right, he doesn't in the email. I think...
That was my two cents. That's my two cents. Anyway,
that's about worth that too. Regarding the chicken egg dilemma of character and story, I'd like to share my own take. One of my key characters, Noriko, was originally much different when I was first designing the Barn Runner series. For almost the entire development process, she was a little shorter, chubbier, dorkier, and shyer. But when it came time I hope not. I hope he didn't make her Shia LaBeouf. When it came time to actually put her in the game, I decided to radically redesign her at the last minute to make her more of a confident, if tech-oriented, femme fatale, as befits a noir detective story. Naturally, her personality changed quite a bit as a result. The shy, geek girl cliché no longer seems suitable to the sexier, more confident design. I traded one cliché for another, I suppose, but this just goes to show that if you can, that you can have a character you really like, change that character to something quite different, and still end up with a character you also like. The story had to change a little bit to fit around her now, which was also a nice surprise. Anywho, that's my 2 cents. That's his 2 cents. His 2 cents was a lot longer than your 2 cents. Your words are expensive. Looking forward to the next podcast. P.
My
P
words
in the letter. No, in the,
my words are expensive. I get paid to write them.
Metabolic waste.
you're sick
thank
too
you
now.
For writing in punch. And I've always thought that having a design document, having a plot outline, having character summaries and all that stuff should never be something that you're held or hold yourself strictly to. They're guidelines, they're a foundation to work from, and stuff. Every game I've worked on has changed in the production process. Every game.
Yeah. We just had a lengthy discussion about this last night, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So I agree that
baby.
It's a nice surprise sometimes when a character will change on you and you find out who the character is as you develop them.
Sure.
You know, here in Ponch's case, he found out who this character was just as he was starting to make the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. But, I think you shouldn't go, I want to do exactly this character and then have someone that doesn't fit quite right. You can change them. And I mean, one of the hallmarks of an interesting character study or hero's journey is to see a character change anyway.
Sure.
So that could be part of that. But yeah, thank you for writing in, Punch.
Yes, thanks, Punch. I had an experience similar to that as far as like having an already established character who changed a bit and suited the story better. In when I was making Ben Jordan 7, the character of Percival Quentin Jones, I knew I wanted to bring him back, but I couldn't really think of a good way to introduce him in the story. And so I realized that he would be perfect to be the one who gives you the whole lead and information on the Knights of St. Anthony, which then, you know, led to the big twist cliffhanger at the end. So,
do you not plan his character out, like the reveal that happens to his character from the start?
I did, but I didn't plan... The whole being a member of this secret society thing kind of came out later while I was making the game.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, no, the whole rest
so,
of
I mean,
was...
I guess that kind of is more his role changing slightly more than his actual character changing.
Right. Yeah, but still.
Yeah.
It's still
an interesting...
It sort of follows the same principle. Anyway.
To an extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, what have you been playing this week?
Last weekend I played through Red Alert, Command & Conquer Red Alert, which I think I had mentioned I was playing when we did the last podcast.
You were playing it while we were playing the podcast. I mean, while we were recording the podcast.
Good. I've since completed that.
Good.
That's a good game. I like that. I remember it's funny because that we had a local computer store, which is weird because it's such a small town, you know, and
you
go there and there'd be no one else in the store ever. So
you had a local computer store in Dudelkind?
No, in Meriden.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
But, I mean, that's 60 kilometers away, which here counts as next door.
Yeah, fair enough.
So my brother and I would be, like, the only ones in this store, like, these two little kids looking through this store. And, obviously, I don't think the guy sold much, so, like, he was keen to make any sale he can. And my brother and I had played Command & Conquer and were super hyped up on Command & Conquer. Like, we love this thing. Mm-hmm. And we saw... in the store, Command & Conquer Red Alert, and we're like, oh my, I didn't know Red Alert was even a game until I saw it in the store. I'm like, oh my god, I need this in my life. But it had an MA 15 plus rating, or I think it might have been M15. So, like, you know, it had violence and stuff like that. And, you know, I was 9 years old, or 10 years old, something like that, in 97. I would have been either 9 or 10. Anyway, so, you know, my mum came back from doing her shopping
to
pick us up because she was like, oh, I can leave him at the computer store.
You would have been 9 because I was 15 in 1997 and I'm 6 years older than you, so.
Yeah, but I was born in November, so it doesn't like...
Yeah, and I was born in January, so you would have been 9 turning 10 in 97.
I know how old I was, but I don't know what part of the year it was.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, no, I know how old I was in the year, I just don't know what part of year it was.
Alright, I thought you were just confused about your age. I'm sorry, I needed to remind you.
Jesus, I'm not you. I know who I am.
I know who I am, too. Wow, wow, wow.
But yeah, so... Anyway. So, my mum came back, and we were like, oh my god, we need this game, we need this game, we need this game. And she looks at it, and she goes, oh, I don't know, it says, you know...
Yeah, mature audiences.
Mature audiences.
You're still not a mature audience.
There's never been a
yeah.
you could claim of me.
Yeah.
But the guy at the counter was like, oh, it's okay, you know. You
have oh, I know this story.
Pictures. She's like, okay, you know. And I was like, yes, that dude is my... Like, I still love that guy today. Because, you know, it's... There's, like, a few animations in that I'm like, Jesus, that's like, you know. And there's... Yeah. So, but yeah, I love Command & Conquer Red Alert. And then I played through Paradigm, the adventure game by Jacob Janerka. And I'd never played it, so it was, for me, a start-to-finish experience, which was really cool. Because I love playing through in one go. And
okay.
I really, really enjoyed it. I think his puzzles get better as they go, because it's his first game.
Yeah.
And yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, and I gave him some feedback and some stuff. And it was interesting, because there's some puzzles in there that no one solved before. So I kind of, as I was solving them, I kind of gave him... what I was thinking while I was mm-hmm. solving them, so he could see the sort of process. And he was like, oh, do you want a hint? I'm like, dude, let me solve them, and then you can see what it took for me to get there, and you can see, you know, how much what I'm thinking aligns with what you wanted me to think when I'm playing this thing. But what I really liked about Paradigm, and I'm sure you've noticed it, is that he changes the dynamic up and the style up quite a few times without it ever mm-hmm. not feeling like an adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
He changes the style of play. Like, sometimes it resembles an arcade brawler. Sometimes yes. it resembles a sort of role-playing game battle.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it resembles, like, a button-mashing thing. But the whole time, it still feels like an adventure game, which is really, really inspiring to see somebody take all these different styles, but never being like, okay, now you're at the... Like, I was ranting about action bits and adventure games last week. This is the opposite, where it looks like different genres, but you're still adventure game. So, yeah, I really like that. So, he's you know, it's going to be a while before he's got the game out, but everybody should check it out and have a look at it, and if you haven't already kickstarted it, check out the screenshots, see what it's all about. And he's a local guy, and, you know, he's a nice guy, so I'm really fond of Jacob, and I like his game, and I look forward to it being completed. I really had a good time playing through it, you know. I started playing through it with, like, a critical mind, you know, trying to help him out as a developer, and then I was like, man, this is good, I'm gonna go get some snacks and play this like a proper game, you know, like, yeah, that really impresses me when a still obviously rough version of a game can make me feel that way. So yeah, that was good. I started another Cryo game by the name of Dragon Law.
I'm sorry.
And it's an interesting experience.
Interesting.
It's a real Cryo.
Is it really interesting, or is it interesting in the way that I use the word interesting?
It's a Cryo game.
Well,
that's a really
explain
really
to our listeners.
But unfortunately, I was getting pretty well, you know, I was going through it, I was solving the puzzles,
mm-hmm.
I was enjoying it to the extent that I did, it was better than I expected from a Cryo game, but I expected to burn it, you know, with fire.
Okay.
So, you know,
all right.
It's pointless, and it's silly, and it's kind of, you know, lame, and there's a lot of issues with it, but I still wanted to finish it. And I've run into a bug where I can't get into a certain room
mm-hmm.
without it crashing.
Right.
So I'm probably going to wait till it's on sale on GOG for really, really cheap, which hopefully it goes on, because I mean, it's a Cryo game. Who else is going to buy it unless it's on really, really cheap?
Yeah,
and then just buy it and then just play through it like that.
Okay.
But yeah, so I never finished that. But hopefully one day I'll get to... I have the feeling, because there's only two CDs, and I know how much I played of the first CD, and I know how much I played of the second CD, I have a feeling I'm pretty close to the end.
Hmm.
So
maybe they never anticipated anyone would get that far, and they never bothered testing for bugs.
Yeah, I know people have finished, so...
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's... that's disappointing. When you're close to the finish of a game and you want to finish it, it's not like that you hate the game so you're not finishing it. It's that like you want to finish the game but you can't.
Right.
That's frustrating because I, you know, I wanted closure on Dragon Law. But
I'm sorry.
I was looking at the Scum VM, and you'd mentioned this to me briefly, but I hadn't investigated it. I was looking at the Scum VM update that dropped a few days ago, actually, and they've added support for Beavis and Butthead in Virtual Stupidity, which is one of my favorite point-and-click adventures of all time. So I got my CD, and I chucked it in, and it worked perfectly well on my Windows 7 machine, so I am probably going to be replaying that, because I haven't played that for a year or two. And one of my all-time faves.
How'd you play it last time? With DOSBox?
No, with a computer that is running Windows 95.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. No, it doesn't run on DOSBox. It is a Windows game.
Ah, okay.
That's why I don't put... Like, that's why I was excited about the Scum VM release. Is because
right.
It's pretty hard to get, like, running well in Windows for me, in Windows 95. Mm. Even though I've got, like, a machine with Windows 95, there's... It's a multimedia... game and it doesn't like loading stuff.
There's a word that nobody uses anymore.
All those problems games had back then. So.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I'm excited to play it because I mean it's Beavis and Butthead, so it's stupid and it's dumb and the jokes are silly and you know, but it looks pretty good. It's fun to play. It's genuinely well designed. Like there's problems, obviously. Mm. Every 90s adventure game has problems.
Yes. Well, every adventure game has problems.
Right, but. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And, good. Yeah, so that's going to be cool to play through again.
Good.
And is that everything I've been playing? No, I've been playing Duke Caribbean Life's a Beach.
Oh, my God.
Good old Duke.
I'm Duke Nukem, Life's a Beach.
Yeah, so that's good.
Check out my hairy nuts, coconuts.
You actually get to... look, Duke Caribbean, I don't care what anybody says about it, is really fun.
Hawaiian shirts on the pigs.
Yeah, it is. But I
think
holy really
shit. I don't know. I don't know what Duke Nukem says. I just like doing the John St. John voice.
I like it when they got John St. John to read out from 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh my
in the Duke
God.
Nukem voice. That was great.
Wow. I didn't see that. I'm glad I didn't see that. Did he do the bit about, like, the chocolate starfish or whatever? The inner goddess?
He did something about... Something about... I don't know. Something about some silver balls that he's gonna put them inside you or something right. like that. I don't right. really remember. I just remember thinking it hilarious because it's...
Balls of steel. Yeah. Anyway.
And that's actually the only part of... 50 Shades of Grey that I've ever, you know, there's a whole lot of people reading it and being shocked by it and stuff like that, but John St. John is the only one of those that I've seen.
Well, good, that's probably for the best.
Yeah, but Duke Caribbean's fun, man. I love the fact that they took this over the top shooter thing and just made it even more comical and dumb. Like, it's everything you'd expect it to be, you know.
They
I love
a
the
lot
fact,
of
my favorite was that
they did a lot of reskins and stuff, didn't they? Because they have Caribbean, they had Nuclear Winter, they had the Washington, D.C. one.
That's not a lot.
That's, well, how many...
The Washington, D.C.
get that many expansions?
It's hardly a reskin.
Well, but I mean, it's an expansion. It's
Yeah. It's an expansion pack. Yeah, but I think everyone would agree that Caribbean is the best.
Okay.
But yeah, my favorite thing about it, and this is... It's such a stupid thing to have a favorite thing about a game that be this, but, you know, I love everything about it, except the thing that really gets me is that they've replaced the first starting pistol with a water pistol and the shotgun with a super soaker, but you can still use them underwater. I really love that. For some reason, that just amuses the hell out of me.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing. What have you been playing?
Not as much as you. I also played Paradigm, but I didn't play it through the whole thing. I only played about halfway through to Act 2. Actually, no, how many acts are there?
There are two acts and an epilogue.
Oh, okay. So then I guess I am about halfway through. So I got through the first act, and I got...
I would say
the second act
is longer.
Okay, good, because the first act is not super long, but it's... Yeah. So that's good. Yeah, I've enjoyed it too. I've played the game in several iterations, and last time I played it, it ended right before the house that you have to go into before you play Boosting Thugs, which I really enjoyed. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a fun game, and I think it has some real potential, and I'm curious to see. I mean, I have to finish playing it, obviously. So maybe I'll do that a bit this weekend. But yeah, it's been fun, and I look forward to seeing how it all turns out. I also briefly, very briefly, played Arcanum of Magic, or of Steamworks and Magic Obscura. Yes, Arcanum of Steamworks and Magic Obscura, which was on sale. I don't know if it's still on sale, but it was on sale on GOG for $1.99, so that's a pretty good deal.
That is a good deal, considering how much I paid for it when I got it.
Yeah, I bought it at the insistence of a very persuasive Australian fellow who shall remain nameless, but I think we all know who it is.
I have a bloody name, I'm not the nameless one, it's Arcanum, not Planescape Torment.
Well, alright, it was you. Surprise. Yeah. And you said, play Arcanum, play Arcanum, play Arcanum, play Arcanum. I was like, fine, fuck off, Jesus Christ, I'll download it. So I downloaded it, and I didn't play too much. Honestly, I only played, like, about 30 minutes, and a lot of that was just cycling through all of the backstories available for your character, which I found really interesting.
I would say, even though they're quite in-depth excuses for stat changes, they're really just stat changes.
Yeah, no, that's what I noticed, but I was just really... I've never played an RPG like that, where you have so many choices of, like, stat changes in framed in the context of, like, backstories and things like that. So, that was interesting. I forget which one I picked. It was one for charisma. I'm pretty sure it was the one where you were trained to be a thief or something, or a charlatan's apprentice or something like that. I don't remember. Okay. Anyway. Because I don't like combat in RPGs too much, so I was... And you mentioned to me that it's possible to have high dialogue and charisma and whatever and get other people to fight your battles, which is fine. I'll play that way.
Yeah. It's interesting because the first time I played through Arcanum, I played it how I played the demo, which was as a sword-wielding, magic-using warrior who, like, you know, was fast and strong and kick butt and everything like that. And after I played it like that, I went back and started again as, like, a gnome that had no physical prowess but heaps of charisma. And, like, and I could, you know, gamble really well. And so because I had such high charisma, I could recruit a lot of party members. I could use my gambling skill and haggling skill to buy them the best gear possible.
How big was the demo? How big was the demo?
I'm not talking about the demo, I'm talking about the actual game.
Oh, I thought you were...
I have the full game, yeah.
No, I know, but I thought you mentioned that you had done this while trying the demo.
Well, when I tried... No, this is when I played the full game.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so I basically let everyone else do the fighting for me while I walked around in a top hat and a smoking jacket.
Yeah, see, that's what I would do. That's what I plan on doing, so... Yeah,
and you know it takes a while to learn the system of the game. I'll say this: this is how obsessed I was with Arcanum of Steamworks and Magic Obscura. When I played the demo for it, I found a glitch that got you out of the demo area and into the world at large, which was completely bugged. I got to the level cap.
Wow!
In the demo, and you can't do anything else in the demo except fight like low level monsters. And I got to the level.
How long did that take you?
A long time.
And what's the level cap?
Like, a really long time.
Jesus Christ.
Was
this the game... No, this wasn't the game. Which was the game that you used to sneak out of that your mom would tell you go outside?
That was Baldur's Gate
2. Oh, okay. Okay.
But this is how much, like, it's interesting because I could never get into, like, Baldur's Gate at all. That's okay. I could never get into Baldur's Gate at all. And then I played Arcanum.
Really? I thought you loved Baldur's Gate.
And I liked... Well, now you're learning. I loved Jaglines 2, and I loved Fallout stuff, and I loved... that's kind of it. And then I played Arcanum, and I was like, man, this is so good. I need more. And I went and played Baldur's Gate off the back of that, and and that's when Baldur's Gate became my favorite. Okay. It wasn't until I played Arcanum that something clicked for me.
I see. So what you're saying is a lot of people, Arcanum is a gateway drug to RPGs.
What's that, sorry?
What you're saying is that potentially Arcanum is a gateway drug to other RPGs.
Well, I'm saying it was for me.
Okay. Your mileage may vary.
Whether or not that holds true for everybody is debatable.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. I think the reason that I mention it to you is because of the setting you're working at. There's a city right near the start of Arcanum. Like, you can get to it in the first few hours.
Mm.
That is just great to walk around and explore the society of and mm-hmm. how that works when I consider the setting that you're trying to write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And how that reacts to you and the social issues that are there in that setting are really relevant to your interests as a writer right now. Good. And there's not enough games in that sort of thing that explore those sort of themes,
yeah.
in my opinion.
Okay.
So, yeah, you've played Dishonored. Yes. This is the next thing to play.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah, because I was told that Dishonored was a good example of what I was looking for, which I said, all right, well, I already put plenty of Dishonored in Shardlight, so I can run with that.
The thing about Dishonored is that it never really breaks much below the surface of what it does, you know? Mm. Yeah, what you do affects how many enemies you have to kill and the ending of the game,
mm-hmm.
but in Arcanum, like, each individual story has different outcomes.
Right.
Which is much, and, you know, there's much bigger, the political considerations are stuff you get to have a say in,
right.
not the stuff that you are a part of, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I like it a lot.
Good. Well, I hope to enjoy it as well. Aside from that, I also replayed Quest for Glory 1 VGA over the weekend, last weekend. Mm-hmm. And it was enjoyable. I played as a magic user. We originally were going to do a group playthrough, you and Pete and I, but you requested not to be involved because you didn't want to be spoiled and you didn't want to... you wanted to take your time. So...
Especially as it was going to be a playthrough of the four games, and I've yes. played one.
Right, exactly.
So I just thought, you know, if you're like, hey, this is what I did today, I'm like, well, I've never seen that, and now I know how to solve that. That's
well,
ruined the game for me.
Yeah, I mean, we were going to be conscious of not doing that, but it doesn't matter now anyway. So yeah, I've done that. As I've told you, I'm holding off on playing Quest for Glory 2 and further until you do, so I don't post any spoilers for you, even though I know you're not going to play as a magic user, but still. So yeah, I'm looking forward to completing the series playthrough, because it's been a while since I did it. Actually, I don't think I've done it on this computer ever.
So that's a fair few years then.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think last time was, like early, mid-2000s. So yeah, it might have almost 10 years perhaps since I've done
years.
It. Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Well, mid-2000s was 10 years ago or more.
Yep, yeah, it was. So, there you go. Yeah, so that's fun. And is that everything? I think so. I didn't play anything on PS4 this week.
Okay.
So,
I also played a little bit of Ultima 4,
okay.
but not a lot.
Right.
Not a great deal.
Yeah,
so,
it's been kind of a
I don't
busy
have a
week.
Lot to say about that yet.
Okay. Well, I noticed that it starts the same way as Ultima 6 with the Gypsy Caravan. Do all the Ultima games start like that?
No.
With the fortune teller
character? Not that I don't think so. I've only seen a couple of intros to Ultima games. Ultima is one of those series that I love old role-playing games,
mm-hmm.
and I love big role-playing worlds that are reactive and deep, and yet somehow I've never played Ultima much.
I've never been able to play Ultima 6 because it always crashes after you select your stats at the Gypsy Caravan. So,
well, that was on your old computer a long time ago.
No, it still happens. It shouldn't have crashed
on
my
GOG for quite inexpensive.
Yeah, maybe. I'll see. Maybe I can get it working on DOSBox. I mean, I got Wing Commander to finally work with the sound, so maybe I can finally get Ultima 6 to work. I just haven't tried it.
Right. That's more to the point, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. I really want to play Ultima 7. I desperately want to play Ultima 7. It's the game that sounds exactly like every single thing I want in a role-playing game. But I have such a hard time. I've tried getting into it a few times, and everything, the angle of view is so weird.
Yeah, that's another thing, too, that I've seen
the
in screenshots.
The font is hard to read.
Yeah.
It's also overwhelming to have this huge, big place and damn all you, the people Lord and British. They're all talking at me. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to start with the simpler Ultima games and work my way up to the point where I can finally get into Ultima 7. That's my end goal.
That seems like a reasonable course of action, I would say.
Yeah. So Ultima 4 is way easier to get into than I thought it would be. I thought it was going to be like this super unfair old role-playing game. Hmm. And it's not. It always surprises me. I'm with role-playing games from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like that, like you are with people that have been successful. You meet them and you're like, oh man, they're actually friendly. That's exactly how I am with old role-playing games. I don't expect any of them to be nice or fun. I don't, because I know what designers are like from that time. They're assholes.
Oh my god.
They love killing you. And so when I find out that they're actually fun, I'm like, oh geez, this is actually really good.
Hmm.
Not everybody was making Realms of Arcania.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Sometimes it just seems to depend on country of origin, if I'm being honest.
I guess. That sounds mighty xenophobic to me.
Why?
I don't know. I'm just teasing, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, so, Ultima 4. We'll see. We'll see. I really hope that I can get into Ultima series, because it sounds perfect for me. I just haven't got into it yet.
Yeah, alright, fair enough. Alright, so is that everything we've been playing?
I believe so.
Good. Let's move on to this week's topic. So, recently, as you know, I've been working on a new game. I feel I need to sound more lively. I feel kind of like... So, recently, as you know, I've been working on this new game.
That's it, we're done. That's all the energy you would get from us.
pretty well for me anyway. Anyway, I started writing everything down and designing the world and everything in January. So the past 2 months, in between, you know, polishing up Shardlight and everything, I've been writing this world and these characters and things for this story I want to tell and this game style that I want to do. And, I've been writing this Victorian setting, sort of alternate history, just kind of like, you know, making stuff up and making the world as interesting as I can. And and so, recently, last weekend actually, I went over to Dave's because I had just started writing out the individual stories that I wanted to tell in this game. And I was having trouble with one, and I had talked to you about it, and we had a discussion about the mechanics of it and stuff. And long story short, basically, I said, all right, I'm going to talk to Dave, and I'm going to say, look, I want to run these ideas by you and see what you have to say. So I went over to Dave's, and I was telling him about it, and Dave had already sort of glanced at my design document before, and I had sent him an early version, and he had looked through it, and he told me that he liked it. But one thing that he always said was, what's so special about this world aside from the fact that it's just like an alternate history thing? And I was like, well, I mean, it's really more about the setting it's really more about the characters than the setting. You know, I just want it to be not bound by historical accuracy if I'm going into a historical setting. So I went over and I talked to him, and in addition to helping me out and realize that the thing I had written was not very good and I had to go back and rework it, he said to me, well, that's the thing, like, all these, you have these really interesting stories, but again, the world doesn't really feel like it's very special, like, this could happen in modern times, why does it have to be this? And I said, well, mostly because... the main thing I'm thinking about is the fact that the lack of technology, like, you can't just go and search up on a computer or Google and make your investigation super easy, because you don't have that. You actually have to do legwork and stuff like that. So then he said, why don't you consider making it steampunk? And I thought, well, I mean, I'm not super familiar with steampunk, and I don't want to make it so that it feels like it's just tacked on just to make it, oh, look, this is a steampunk game. But the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, this actually is a valid way to make the world interesting. And, I mean, there's very many levels and different types of steampunk and different ways of doing it. So I decided that I was going to do it. And in addition to being something that makes the world slightly more interesting. I also think that it has a lot to do with marketability. And that's what I want to talk about this podcast.
Okay.
Is the idea of if you're going to make a commercial game or, you know, you want a selling point, it's not something... Well, I'm in two minds of it, but the general idea of marketability and making your game not only, you know, the game you want to make, but also take into consideration that you are going to have people who want to buy this game, and you're going to have to do something to pique their interest.
Hmm.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts, or shall I start? Do you have any initial thoughts, I should say? Or should I start with mine?
I think, you know, I think there's more to it. When you say, oh, the main reason for me picking this setting was because of not doing the legwork, because you don't have the technology. I think there's more to it like that, because you could pick any period before 1995 and have that still be true.
Yeah, to a point.
That's true for a 1980s detective procedural, a 1930s one,
mm-hmm.
a 1740s one. It doesn't matter. You know, there's obviously more reasons than that, to my mind, that you picked the setting that you picked. I think you like certain elements of the atmosphere.
Sure.
Of that setting. I know you've mentioned certain historical creative types.
Yes, Edgar Allan Poe and Charles Dickens.
Yeah, and John Atkinson Grimshaw.
Yes.
Who you are being inspired by and creating. So I think there's more to it than just like, oh, I don't want them to look up stuff on computers. I think it's a valid choice to have a period in time that you like personally and want to emulate certain aspects of
uh-huh.
in your work.
Uh-huh.
I think it's very hard for me personally to identify and to explain and to, I guess, itemize what it is that makes a setting interesting for me.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I usually require as a player is that I can relate to it. Right. I want it to be relevant to my interests, you know? If you've got some things set a long time ago where people have wildly different beliefs to me, I have a really hard time relating to that. Because I can't relate to the people in the setting.
Uh-huh.
So, but I also think there's more than that. There's more to it that makes a setting interesting. I really had a great time with the setting. Like, you know, I've been kind of lucky because I've got to do urban fantasy, I've got to do cyberpunk, I've got to do post-apocalyptic, I've got to do these wide range of genres, and you can explore those settings and think, okay, how would life be in these settings? But that doesn't necessarily make it interesting.
Right.
Still, there's got to be more to it than that. So yeah, I think it's hard for me to know why a setting's interesting. I can't really itemize it.
I would say, just as far as thinking about how you're going to pitch your game, the main thing that you usually say when you're talking about your adventure game is the genre. And, you know, Shardlight was described as post-apocalyptic. You know, Primordia is also described as post-apocalyptic. Technobabylon's obviously cyberpunk. Gemini Rue is sci-fi. You know. So, you have to take that into consideration with your setting. Because, I mean, I can speak from both ends of the spectrum. I mean, Shardlight, I've seen people who have said, oh, this setting looks really interesting, just based on the fact that, oh, it's post-apocalyptic. Whereas A Golden Wake was a hard sell because it was something that no one has really done. Like, historical adventure in the 1920s. And some people were like, oh, okay. But a lot of people are like, oh, that interest just, that, or that setting just doesn't interest me. So,
okay.
A Golden Wake is not a very marketable game in that setting because I would say it's even more niche in an already niche genre to be interested in a historical 1920s game.
I think that little niche really, really, really appealed to some people, and all 17 of them bought it straight away.
Asshole.
You know what I mean? Like, not trying to be dismissive of it, but certain people are like, oh, finally an adventure game that's not cyberpunk, that's not post-apocalyptic,
exactly,
that's not King's Quest. I'm really excited about this.
Right.
And then the other, you know, the other people were like, I have trouble connecting. Because personally, exactly. I get excited when I see a cyberpunk game. I get excited when I see a post-apocalyptic game. I get excited when I see urban fantasy.
Right, there's certain...
That Fallout was fun, mm-hmm. that Deus Ex was fun, and Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines were fun. I really loved exploring those worlds. I want more of that. That's what draws me to those settings.
Yeah.
Steampunk, as soon as you say steampunk, I get excited about Arcanum because I remember exploring that world and I want to do it again.
Exactly. There's certain genres that, because other works have been popular and worked in them, they automatically pique people's interest. And this isn't
you
to
like
say...
rock and roll because you listen to the Beatles, you see the Rolling Stones record, you're like, hell yeah, I want to try that in case it's as good as the other thing I like.
Sure, sure. And admittedly, I could have made a Golden Wake way better, and ideally, it would have been really good, and people would have looked past that and said, oh, well, this is a really good game, try it, and you might like the 1920s setting, or whatever. But that didn't happen, and that's fine. But, you know, it's definitely something that you want to take into consideration. Like, and that speaks to the other thing I wanted to talk about, which about tacking things on, which is... Don't do it just for the sake of thinking, oh, well, if I make my game steampunk or cyberpunk or whatever, it'll automatically have a fan following because people like this genre. And then, you know, only do it if it interests you and if you're willing to learn about it. Like, I'm not a huge... Like I said, I'm not really familiar with steampunk as far as the intricacies of it, but... I've played games that I've come to realize have steampunk elements. I mean, obviously we talked about Dishonored. Dreamfall has steampunk elements in it.
Yes.
I'm going to be playing through Arcanum, which is very steampunk, apparently.
Yes, it is the very essence of steampunk.
The thing is, there's... excuse me. There's really not that many steampunk adventure games. If you think about
it's
it.
Not. It's a real shame.
I think it's one of those genres that... I think cyberpunk, to an extent, is the same way, because it seems
bullshit.
Like... What? That there's not that many?
Yeah. Do you know how many cyberpunk adventures came out last year, other than Techno Babylon?
Oh, okay. Cyberpunk's a bit saturated, then.
It is. But you've got read-only memories, you've got Void and Meddler, you've got, what's it called? Else Heartbreak.
Okay.
You've got... There was another one.
Anyway, steampunk is one of those genres that it seems like is really, really, really big and really saturated and stuff, but I think there's more of a cosplay steampunk scene than there is actual games. Because right now, offhand of games, I mean, aside from those, Bioshock Infinite, I think, was fairly steampunk.
I believe so.
I think if you compared the list of how many steampunk games there are to cyberpunk games, it would be a
discrepancy. I genuinely wish there was more steampunk stuff.
Okay. Well,
that is I'm desperate for a second Arcanum.
Your wish is my command. I'm not making another Arcanum, by the way. But I am making a steampunk game.
You would drive you crazy trying to do it because it's the most ambitious thing in forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's like, I say to people, like, oh, I wish there were more, you know, adventure games based around ancient Egypt. Like, you know, I'd love that. And they're
around
like, oh,
what?
So many of them. I'm like, name one.
Around what did you say? Ancient Egypt?
I can't talk. I was going to say ancient Egyptian mythology, but then I realized I actually want ancient Egypt. Like, that's what I want.
Well, apparently the next Assassin's Creed is going to be set in ancient Egypt.
I don't want a dumb game. I want a good one.
Hey, Syndicate was good.
I want a good one.
Syndicate was kind of steampunk, in a way.
In the fact that you had stupid gadgets to help you get around the world.
They weren't stupid, they were great. I love that line rope shooter. It was fantastic.
You didn't like Just Cause 2, so you don't get to talk.
Who said I didn't like Just Cause 2?
The fact that you haven't gone much and played much of it?
I've played enough of it. I'll go back and play it, eventually.
But yeah,
I get killed a lot, and that frustrates me. Anyway.
Well, you're the Sierra fan.
it's a different genre.
If
you gave King Graham a semi-automatic weapon and had him go and mow down all the trolls in Daventry, that would be different. Or the rocks that crushed him.
Isn't that King's Quest 8? I'm joking.
Yeah,
But yeah, people are like, oh, there's so many adventure games set in ancient Egypt. I'm like, name one, please. I'm desperate to play one.
Yeah, sure. I think
I even said to Dave, obviously like Egyptian mythology because you've named your company Where Did I Games, can we make one? And he said, like, but there's so many of them. I'm like, name one.
Ankh.
I mean a good one.
Did you play Ankh?
I played the demo.
Ugh, I played the whole thing. It was so bad.
Isn't that by the same people that made Jack Keane? Or am I
Deck 13. It's the same company.
Ugh, Jack Keane's so bad.
I never played Jack Keane, but it didn't look very
good. Well, you're just obviously smarter than me.
Nah, well. And I only played the first Ankh. I didn't play the other two.
Well, there's a point where you got to realize at some point, surely.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think it feels like a genre is saturated. Mm-hmm. But to those of us actually looking to experience in a playable form.
Yeah.
Like, there's a million steampunk pictures.
Yeah, sure.
There's a
million steampunk things to buy on Etsy, apparently.
Yeah.
If Richard Cobbett and Rizulko are
also,
to be believed.
But also, I think that sort of steampunk where you've got a top hat and goggles and a corset and that's it.
Yeah.
That doesn't interest me at all. I love the politics behind it. The idea of dealing with industrial revolution in an archaic world. That's what excites me about steampunk.
That's the thing, though, that's interesting to me about steampunk, and we've derailed from our topic here, but...
Doesn't matter.
Ultimately, historically, the industrial revolution, you had this sort of political influence, or these political situations, because you had the Luddites, who were people who were so anti-technology of this industrial revolution that they would sabotage printing presses and machines and things like that because they were afraid that they were going to be replaced by these machines, which ultimately they were.
You love Arcanum so much, dude.
But that's the thing, like, you can draw so much from actual history that it doesn't necessarily have to be steampunk, because it's the same concept which actually happened. You just have to reappropriate it to a steampunk setting.
Yeah, that's why you like Arcanum, because that's what it does.
Well, sure. And I've already had some ideas along those lines for my setting. But, yeah, it's... So, I mean, but it just... That's the thing, like, it doesn't seem like... Why bother making it steampunk if I can just make it historical, you know?
Because there is the cool factor.
Right, there's the cool factor, and there's the fact that not making it 100% historical allows you some wiggle room and some leeway to get away with, you know...
There we go.
Some more anachronistic things.
Yeah, a lot of the problems that comes up as a writer when you're trying to juggle that sort of stuff just blows straight away when you go, well, this is my own world.
Incidentally, last night I was worried that the FBI was going to be onto me because I was Googling poisons that can be mixed in food undetected. And I
see how many writers there are and the
shit I know.
That they Google.
So I know. And then I found a forum that was like, listen, you're the writer, just make it up. And I was like, you know what, you're right. So I did.
I mean, here you're even in your own setting.
Exactly, so, yeah.
You can just have, like... There's one thing I love about Arcanum, is that you have a bunch of products you can buy from the store that do nothing.
Uh-huh.
But when you go into a store, you can buy, you know, Dr. Lloyd Grodbert's snake oil or something.
Oh,
like
I love
that.
All that stuff. I went to the pharmacy museum.
It's got, like, these really antique bottles in the store.
Yeah.
You can't do anything with them.
I went to the pharmacy museum in New Orleans, and they had all sorts of old, real bottles of that sort of thing, and it was great.
You've got to... Yeah.
I took lots of pictures.
It's a good choice for you, because that does all of that stuff.
Yes, good.
So, yeah, if you're looking for a poison, you just make up, you know,
sure.
Henry Schlesinger's... You know,
well,
acetone cleaner or something.
Henry
like
Schlesinger is not going to be selling poison over the counter, but yes.
Yeah, but he might. In that time, people used to use arsenic domestically.
Yeah, of course. Sure.
So you can do that sort of stuff, you
know? Yeah, I know.
So yeah, that's really one cool thing about steampunk is you can throw the historical accuracy out the window and well, I'm going to make something up.
Exactly.
You can do that anyway in a historical setting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more people will try and call you out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Probably.
I think
so, too.
I don't know.
But anyway,
I think
this...
a big draw of steampunk is just the cool factor.
Yeah. But this is not the steampunk podcast. This is about marketability, like I said.
Is it? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that was my plan to talk about. But what I was going to say, what I was going to go back to say was, as I was saying originally, was... not being familiar with steampunk, but I'm willing to learn. And it does interest me. So, if you're going to make your game... of a certain genre just for the sake of marketability, don't do it just for the sake of marketability. Do it because you're actually interested in it. Like, I would not make a high fantasy game, because even though I know that high fantasy is popular and lots of people love high fantasy and it would probably sell really well, I'm personally not interested in it, and I would not enjoy making a game in that genre. And, I mean, if I had a terrible job where Dave said to me, you have to make this game now in this genre, and that's what you're going to work on, then maybe it would be a different story, because I'd have to do it. And I'm sure plenty of people work on games that they're not particularly interested in the setting of. But, you know, I don't have that problem. So, you know, I'm free to make up whatever I want. And most independent game developers are also free to do that. So, sure.
I mean, I do think as someone that's worked on commission for stuff, that you can find ways to get interested in things that you wouldn't normally be interested in. Horror is really not my sort of genre. When I play horror games, you know, like, I'm like, okay, this is whatever, but it rarely, rarely interests me. But when I was working on the Charnel House trilogy, originally Sepulchre, or however you pronounce that, that was really interesting to me because I read the documents, I read the script, and it still spoke to me, even though I'm like, oh, that isn't really the genre that I would choose to work in. The characters interested me, the events interested me, and it was not so much about the genre itself, but the specific treatment,
right.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's all about, ultimately, it's all about your story, and it's about your world.
I think you can make anything interesting if you choose.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
Or if you put yourself into it, put your heart into it.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Shardlight, the post-apocalyptic thing, like, when we made Shardlight, our thought wasn't, oh, let's make a post-apocalyptic game. We just came up with, as the idea evolved, it just seemed interesting to put it in a post-apocalyptic setting.
Well, I think what happened there is you came to me with the idea of
the plague,
one of the characters, and the plague. And the plague, naturally, we thought, well, how would this work? How would you have a plague of this proportion?
Right.
It's either going to be really old, or it's going to be after an apocalypse. We either do Black Plague, or we either do Future Plague.
Right.
We made a choice.
Right.
So you kind of... Plague. Yeah, you kind of... As your ideas evolve, your setting will evolve with them.
Right. And that was the thing. We never... It was never post-apocalyptic... was being number one priority. In fact, a lot of times...
Well, there was obviously a point where we had settled, and that was what we were doing.
Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, that was never the driving thing, like, oh, we have to make this game post-apocalyptic because that's what's going to sell copies. It was,
to sell copies, because I don't know what sells copies.
Right, I know you've never done that, and I've never really done that, but, you know, it's a thing that happens.
Probably.
Have you ever played Game Dev Story?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how accurate a representation that is of the industry, but I would imagine there's some truth in it. But you know how whenever you start a new game, you have to pick the genre and you have to pick the style of what it is. And certain combinations are more yield more team enthusiasm than others. Like if you do historical RPG, for example, they'll get really excited. But if you do, like, I don't know, animal golf game, then they're like, that's a weird combination.
Animal golf game.
Well, you're a fucking weirdo. That doesn't count.
True.
But anyway.
Well, that's the thing. You know what I mean. Predict, but that most, there's a lot of people, you can do a military shooter, and people that like military shooters will go, like we said at the start, I've liked Call of Duty, I've liked Battlefield,
sure,
I've liked Medal of Honor. This is something else in the same style as the stuff that I liked before. Mm-hmm. I might like this. I'm going to check it out.
Can you imagine, I can't think of any military adventure games, except for that very small one that Josh did years back.
Josh Nuremberg did, which was called,
It had some name in another language that I forget what it was.
Yeah. Oh, Lacroix Pan.
That's the one.
Bam. Yeah.
That was a really nice one.
I know,
I mean, it was short, but it was nice.
Yeah, I know, oh, what's it called? Legacy Dark Shadows starts
in
a military.
Oh my god. You don't look like a soldier to me.
Well,
I wonder if anyone
pretty, I mean,
Can we talk about these things? I wonder if anyone's picked up on the Legacy Dark Shadows references in Shardlight.
Who knows? You can talk about what you want.
Okay. Well, I don't want to spoil things for any of our listeners who haven't played Shardlight yet.
Okay.
But look at the
Give
bed.
Give it a while, then.
Yeah, look at the bed inside the mansion. That's what I'll say.
But yeah, it's for me, like, you know, when I see Pillars of Eternity being kickstarted,
mm-hmm.
I look at that and I see Baldur's Gate 3. I love Baldur's Gate. Obviously, I'm going to back it.
Right.
There's a chance that it's going to be as good as Baldur's Gate. It wasn't, but it was still very good, and I don't regret backing it, you know? When I look at Wasteland 2, the Kickstarter for that, why do I back it? Because it looks like Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
But the old Fallout that I liked before I liked the new Fallout, but which see, I know I'm going to get more of, no matter what.
This exactly kind of relates to what I was saying before about... It's kind of sad in a way that you have to depend so much on these previous games, these precedents, in order to make people interested. Because it ultimately is kind of hard to get people interested in new stuff. Not that there's really much room for it, because as they say, there's nothing original under the sun.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, any genre you pick, someone's going to pick... They're going to take something that they liked in that genre. I mean, how many comparisons to the Dagger of Amon-Ra did I get with A Golden Wake?
So, I mean, people will make broad generalizations when there's nothing else to compare it to. People
sure.
compare Blackwell to Monkey Island.
Yeah, they compare. Well,
they obviously didn't play
yeah.
Gabriel Knight
yeah.
or Broken Sword more than
that. I saw people comparing Shardlight to Monkey Island. My name's Amy Weller, and I want to be a mechanic.
Yeah, well, I want to be alive.
Alive, yeah. I want to be a living mechanic.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
Oh no, it's the ghost pop Tiberius.
It's hard to describe stuff to people, and when people ask me what I do in life outside of stuff, and I tell them adventure games, they're like, oh, you mean like Tomb Raider?
Yeah.
Because adventure is such a broad term, and if I say point-and-click game, I've literally said point-and-click game to someone, because I didn't want to use adventure game, so they didn't think I was making Tomb Raider, and they're like, oh yeah, like Doom, you point the mouse and you click at the bad guys, and they die.
That's funny.
And then I went, no, more like Secret of Monkey Island, they're like, oh, I love Monkey Island.
Wow. They didn't equate Monkey Island with point-and-click? That's interesting.
Because they played it once 20 years ago, and they never thought about it since.
Okay.
Like, you know, that's they're not gamers. They don't have the genre specific. You say to a music person, oh yeah, I've been listening to some post-hardcore. They know what you're saying.
Sure.
If I said that to you, you're like, that's not even words, dude. That's not a genre.
I know what... I think I have an idea what post-hardcore is. I mean, I know what hardcore is. I don't necessarily know what would come after that, but hey.
But that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Like, what
yeah,
seems
yeah.
like a normal genre to say to me.
Sure.
To you, you're like, well, I get that it's hardcore, point and click Doom. You point and you click and they die. You know? So, people will make a comparison that they're comfortable, that they understand, that's in their realm of experience.
Sure.
There's no way that Dishonored is anything like Arcanum.
No, it's not.
But there is enough similar elements,
right,
that you can compare them to some extent.
Are there any flying bats in Arcanum? Anyway, yeah. So, but to round this discussion off, yeah. So basically, take that into consideration when you're making your game. Like, there is something to be said about the mass appeal of a game, but don't let it define your direction, and don't let it define... Don't be making your game and think, oh, this isn't genre appropriate enough, or this needs to be more genre appropriate, because that'll pretty much silence any creative vision you have. Like, what post-apocalyptic setting has ever had FOPs in it? None that I can think of. But Shardlight does, and I didn't
What about the Hunger Games?
Kind of.
You told me that was your direct inspiration.
Yeah, well, they're
and
not...
you showed me pictures of FOPs in post-apocalyptic world.
That's true. They're foppish. That's true. But I meant okay. More specifically, fops that dress with like porcelain gas masks and powdered wigs and French
revolutionary costumes. At this point, I believe you're splitting hairs.
Okay. All right. Fine. But anyway. So I didn't think, oh, well, this isn't post-apocalyptic enough, I shouldn't put this in. I was like, no, in my apocalypse, this is gonna be what we're doing. So.
Well, sure, if you've got an idea, run with it.
Yeah, and just don't let the setting dictate what you can and can't do, unless you want to put plastic spray bottles in your post-apocalypse.
Well, I think you should establish ground rules for your setting, which do dictate that.
Sure, yeah.
But it should be you that sets them.
Right.
More to the point.
Yes. Good.
And for any of our listeners, if you can think of good steampunk games, because the last one that I got was Lethus Path of Progress.
Oh, I saw that on GOG and it looked interesting because it looked a lot like Oh, look, I'm doing it! I'm doing it myself! It looked like Caesar 3 and I really liked Caesar 3.
In fairness, that game is exactly Caesar 3 but with steampunk graphics and in a cartoony style.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, it is exactly that.
It piqued my interest because of that, and I almost got it, but I didn't, because I had other things to worry
about.
It's
quite challenging.
Yeah, well, so is Caesar 3. I've never really finished a campaign of Caesar 3.
Okay.
It's one of those games that I pick up after a while and play for a bit.
Caesar 3 fans that, well, one, that isn't good at Lethus.
Okay.
Can't get the hang of it. So
I don't think Caesar 3 fans.
If you can think of any... You know, I know that there's stuff that you can vaguely call. There's like the Curious Exposition or something like that?
Not sure.
I think that's steampunk.
The Gene Machine is a steampunk game, I haven't played much of it because it crashed on my computer. My old Windows 98 computer.
I don't think Curious Expedition is steampunk. I just think it's 19th century.
Okay.
But yeah, if you can think of steampunk games, please let us know, because Francisco wants to research them, and I just love playing them.
Yeah, good. Yeah, so please send those recommendations in. And if you have any, maybe we should jump on the bandwagon of all our other podcast friends and invite people to send us not just letters and messages, but also voicemails.
You can really do what you want.
Yeah, alright. Well, yeah, if you want to contact us in any way, you know how to get in touch with us via Twitter, or you can send us messages to our Twitter accounts. Mine is at Grundislav Games.
Mine is at Ben_304. And if you send me weird voicemails, we'll play them anyway. So be as creepy as you want, I don't care. Trolls, not you. No.
Yeah, you can send, if you want to email voicemails, you can email them to me. I'm grundislav@gmail.com. And if you want to get any messages for the two of us, but we might not see them right away, we are at @BCT_podcast. So, yes, good. I'm going to GDC on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm already sick, so I did things backwards this year. Hopefully that means I won't get too sick after GDC.
Imagine if you just got like double sickness and just...
That would be pretty bad. And that would be really bad.
Really bad.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty crazy because it's the week of St. Patrick's Day and our adventure game party is on actually St. Patrick's Day, so I worry about how that's going to be. But
why?
Because it's going to be crowded and any bar we go to is going to be crowded because of St. Patrick's Day.
We'll reschedule the night.
That's too late now.
Oh, too late.
Yeah, there's too many things happening the whole week. Anyway. So yeah, I'll be at GDC next week, so no podcast next week. And no podcast the week after that, because I have to go home and take care of some family stuff. So I'll do my GDC recap. Well, I could maybe do my GDC recap if you're around on Saturday. We'll see.
I don't know where I'm going to be. I'm going to be away, maybe, in bits and pieces, but I'm not sure yet.
Well, are you going to be around on the 20th? Because that's the day of the big podcast extravaganza over on Space Quest Historian.
I don't know yet.
Uh-oh. Well, you better let him know.
Why?
Anyway. Yeah, because he'll be really sad if you're not around.
Chelsea's just always sad.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway. All right, thanks for listening. We'll see you when we see you. Bye.
Bye.